always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider for Offside, as well as their lead Lakers content creator. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about yet another game where the Lakers got their butts kicked by a young, fast, long, athletic team that turned them over and ran them right off of the court. I'm going to really quickly pull up their schedule, the Lakers schedule, that is. While we are talking this out, I will be also, you know, as I usually do, keeping an eye on the post-game comments to see what people are saying about this one. And Lakers people specifically are saying about this one. We'll talk about Rich Paul's comments now that they have aged well. Based off of the one game, I'm being kind of facetious there, but still, Austin played not quite the game that you would probably want to play on the heels of LeBron James's agent kind of sort of calling for you to be benched. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and then we will just kind of see where the conversation takes us. I don't like the trend of the Lakers getting their asses kicked to the extent that they do in all of these games that they have lost so far this season. I don't like the lack of fight. They did kind of have that fake comeback late or whatever, but you know, it was pretty clear that that was a fake comeback. And then also we have to talk about these starters and the fact that the Lakers, they are built off of the premise that they can be just completely overwhelming by way of spacing. And it's hard to be overwhelming by way of spacing when your best shooter percentage-wise has a molasses in December slow release. So, yeah, there's a lot to kind of talk about with this game. I don't want to completely overreact to it, but I do think that the trend, like, I'm not going to overreact to the Lakers getting their asses kicked by the San Antonio Spurs. Although they kicked the Lakers' asses without their best player. What I will react to, not overreact, but what I will react to is this trend of the Lakers just consistently getting run off of the court by any team with any semblance of any kind of length or athleticism. And this has been, like, J.J. Redick spoke about it after the game. He said, a lot of these losses look pretty similar. And yeah, man, you gonna do anything about it? you gonna try anything different? Or are we just gonna keep racking up wins against teams that you're not gonna play in the playoffs and taking losses like this against teams that you will? A quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button if you guys are checking this out for the first time here on YouTube. If you guys are watching on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge to find the show there. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey. But you know what? Wherever you get them works for me. We start with a quick recap of this game. 132-119 was the final. Counting numbers wise, Luka played fine. 35 points. 8 assists, 5 boards, did have the 5 personal fouls, did have the 3 turnovers, took 24 shots to get to his 35 points, as well as 14 free throws to get to his 35 points, which this is a trend that I think is worth keeping an eye on, is the way that some of these longer athletic teams are kind of defending Luka, where they are backing off of him and giving him the step back 3-pointer. You kind of live with it. It's a backbreaker when it goes in, but it's a turnover essentially when it doesn't. And when he's driving, they are playing the pass Unless he's like fully downhill, and they do want to stop Luka from getting all the way to the rim and shooting an uncontested layup. Like, that is not something that these teams want to give up. But what they are kind of allowing for is the floater. That 5 to 7 foot floater that, you know, at worst is 2 points. But he's not going to get to the free throw line very often shooting floaters. And they are not allowing Luka to get to the lob to Ayton. The better teams are not allowing Luka to get to the lob to to Ayton, nor are they allowing him to throw that skip pass to the opposite corner. They are you know, really kind of staying home there. So something to kind of keep an eye on, the way that some of these better teams are defending Luka. Elsewhere, as far as individual performances go, you add LeBron with 19 points, 15 rebounds, and 8 assists. I actually really liked the energy that LeBron brought to the game early on, and was kind of disappointed that the Lakers collectively just kind of like watched him play really hard and were like, oh, hey, that's cool. That was a bit of a bummer to watch. I thought LeBron was mostly fine, frankly, good in this game. Also had 3 blocks. Don't want to waste performances like that from LeBron. He saw that there was money on the line. And then, you know, for, you know, the most impressive, I would say, performance of the night, that would probably go to Marcus Smart, who scored 26 points, 3 rebounds and assists, as well as a block. He was a +2 in a game that the Lakers lost in mostly blowout fashion. Marcus Smart was 26 points, like I said, 9 of 16 from the field, 8 of 14 from 3-point range. What's funny in this one is that, like, in terms of like just raw plus minus, Rui actually led the way with a +5 in a game that the Lakers were basically blown out of. Now, he only scored 8 points, only grabbed 1 rebound, only dished out 1 assist. But that's an interesting number that I would be curious how his game looks in the light of day whenever I rewatch this one. But Marcus Smart, the thing that actually struck me over the course of this game wasn't just the defense. The defense, like with Marcus Smart, that kind of goes without saying, former Defensive Player of the Year. What really kind of took me by surprise was the difference in release speed when Marcus was shooting a 3-pointer and Rui was shooting a 3-pointer. Like, ball is in and out of honestly, Marcus Smart could probably stand to take another beat on his 3-pointer to get himself collected and get the shot off cleanly, given the way that these teams are defending him. But the ball is like, when he thinks and he senses that he's open, the ball is in and out of his hands very, very quickly. Whereas with Rui, he will oftentimes be open and then like hesitate. Defender closes out, and if you're a 46% 3-point shooter and you're allowing yourself by way of a slow release to get run off of the 3-point line, then you may as well not be a 46% 3-point shooter. So we'll talk a little bit about Marcus and Rui and the starters and stuff over the course of the game. But Marcus, I thought, was overall the best Laker on the court tonight. As far as the Spurs goes, like, this was a thorough ass kicking by a very balanced team that fully understands what their identity needs to be. De'Aaron Fox, I thought, was their steadiest player. Whenever the Spurs needed a bucket, it tended to be De'Aaron Fox. Their best player was probably Stephon Castle. He scored 30 points to go with his 10 boards and 6 assists. He was a +16. De'Aaron Fox, like I said a second ago, +21, being the steadiest Spur on the court. And then outside of that, like, I thought Luke Kornet had really good minutes in this one. And you know, their rookie Dylan Harper, Was in foul trouble a little bit. They didn't really seem to care that he was in foul trouble. He only played 20 minutes tonight. And between those three guards, Dylan Harper and De'Aaron Fox and Stephon Castle, I actually found myself hoping that the Spurs would trade for Giannis just to break up Stephon Castle, Victor Wembanyama, and Dylan Harper. But regardless, like I, you know, this wasn't an individual performance that overwhelmed the Lakers. This was a collective team-wide approach that we are going to run, and then we're going to run some more, and then we're going to run even more, and we're going to keep on fucking running until you stop us from running. And the Lakers could never find any way to stop them from running. And this was, by the way, without Victor Wembanyama, who is their best player at, you know, full stop, but also allows this, like, because of the defense that the Spurs play when Wemby is on the court, he allows the Spurs to get out into transition. So had Wemby played, this game probably would have been even uglier, I would say. And the Lakers, like, there were for most of the game, I would say the Lakers didn't look like they belonged on the court with the San Antonio Spurs, which is kind of a crazy thing to say, seeing as the Lakers are the two seed in this one and the Spurs are a spot or two behind them. So overall, a bummer of a game. This was a game I was really looking forward to. And this is, again, this is a bit of a trend. This is a game I was really kind of looking forward to. This is a game that the Lakers should have showed up for, and they just, like, didn't. All right, so I'm going to start with Rich Paul and his comments on Austin Reeves and the fact that, again, a team with length and athleticism and all that stuff kind of wiped Austin off of the board. And look, Harrison and I said it in yesterday's show. There were points that Rich Paul made that I frankly agree with. Like, they aren't contenders right now. I said this in yesterday's show. I don't think the Lakers, as they are currently constructed, in a conference with the Oklahoma City Thunder, are true title contenders. Not right now. I 100% agree with Rich Paul in his assessment that the Lakers need more athleticism out there. That is crystal clear. For some reason, J.J. Redick keeps throwing Gabe Vincent out there. J.J. Redick's infatuation with Gabe Vincent reminds me of a lot of the mistakes like a first-time high school basketball coach will make, where a lot of high school basketball coaches fall in love with the slap-the-floor, high-energy point guard who they just seem to get along with. Because, like, oftentimes that slap the floor, high energy point guard, that guy winds up being a high school coach at some point. That was not me. I was not high energy at all. You guys can probably figure this out from looking at me and listening to my podcast. I'm not a very high energy guy. I was not most of my coach's favorite player on the team. What I will say, though, is that, like, JJ Redick and Gabe Vincent reminds me of these fresh off high school coaches who see themselves in a player and, like, way overuse that player. And that's all I'm watching from Gabe Vincent. Like, he's this guy that, you know, JJ Redick will say, well, he doesn't make mistakes and he doesn't care about his numbers and he doesn't, and he'll like define Gabe Vincent by the things that Gabe Vincent isn't, in, like, a positive way. And what the Lakers need, if Gabe is going to be one of his first subs into the game, Gabe played. No way. It's saying that Gabe Vincent played 14 minutes in this one. And I just refuse to believe that he only played 14 minutes. I think ESPN's counter has to be broken there. But yeah, like Gabe Vincent is this guy that, like, JJ Redick just extends a lot of basketball principles onto without really taking into account the actual basketball impact that having somebody who is like 6'1 on a good day has, if that guy is going to be your primary point of attack defender in the minutes that he is out there for. Especially, by the way, like one thing that JJ Redick kept doing in this one was subbing Gabe Vincent and Marcus Smart in at basically the same time, which just completely shrinks your overall size and athleticism, frankly, on the court. And if you're already at an athleticism deficiency, and now you're making yourself smaller too, without really improving the overall athleticism on the court, now you're small and slow. And you know who loved small, slow lineups? It was JJ Redick's predecessor, right? So whose name shall not be repeated. So yeah, like I don't know. I don't think this is going to be like, I don't think Rui is going to be out of the starting lineup based off of Marcus Smart shooting the ball well in this one game. I don't think Gabe Vincent is going to fall completely out of the rotation based off of this one game. But I do think that, like, one way or another, the Lakers are going to have to add more athleticism into their rotation. And eventually, maybe you do that by way of trade or the buyout market or personnel tweaks to the roster. But that isn't coming. Like, we're only on December 11th. And by the way, Jen, happy birthday. We are still a few days away from the beginning of trade season. And by the beginning of trade season, I mean, like, players, more players being eligible to be traded. But we don't often see very many trades this early in the trade season. And we for damn sure don't see buyout guys, impact buyout guys this early in the trade season. So you aren't going to see a personnel tweak to help improve the overall length and athleticism within this rotation. So that means it falls to JJ Redick to figure out a way for the Lakers to not enter every single game that they play at such a stark athletic deficiency. And like, when your first sub off of the bench is, or one of your first subs off of the bench is Gabe Vincent, and you start a game as slow as you are with the starting five, like, you're going to be at an insane deficiency or a deficit athletically. And you have a new Thero sitting over there now. You've had Jared Vanderbilt sitting over there this whole time. Hell, I would even argue Nick Smith Jr. offers more as a basketball player than Gabe Vincent does. I haven't watched Nick Smith Jr. play a basketball game so far this season and wonder why the hell he is out there, in the same way that I find myself wondering with Gabe Vincent. And so the Lakers, like the Lakers and their coaching staff and JJ Redick specifically, I think they're going to have to stop convincing themselves about stability or over committing to stability because of, you know, what the trade-off here is. And I do think that there are some options in this rotation that would give the Lakers more of an edge, more of a higher level of give a bleep, more impactful length and athleticism than they have had so far. Like, this was a game against the Spurs. It was crystal clear early on that the Spurs were just so much faster and so much longer and so much more athletic and so much more explosive. And you're like, oh, cool. Well, because Marcus Smart is there, now Udo Thero isn't going to play anymore. And it's like, why not play Marcus Smart and Udo Thero? Why not play Marcus Smart and Udo Thero and Jared Vanderbilt? Why not go, like, last year the Lakers had that Banchy group that I always thought kind of elevated the overall energy level in the game. And this year there is no Banchy group. JJ Redick has basically ditched that bench identity completely. And as a result, the energy level just kind of hovers at, like, mildly interested. like it the interest level in it, and it's fine. You can hover at mildly interested if you are scoring like crazy and executing really well in the half court. But if you aren't, if you're missing shots in the way that the Lakers were missing shots early, or let alone, you know, like if you start turning the ball over, then the avalanches happen. And that's what we saw in this one. And that's what we've seen in every Lakers loss, basically, to this point. Like, I want to find the Lakers schedule. I thought I had pulled it up. I guess I didn't. But, here it is. Yeah, I did. Let's just like run through really quickly the losses that the Lakers have so far. So they lost on opening night to the Golden State Warriors, who are small. They are smaller in stature, but they fly all over the court. They for damn sure flew all over the court in that game. They spread you out, and Steph Curry does Steph Curry things. That was their first loss of the season, and it was a blowout loss, right? They kind of came back a little bit late, but 119-109 was the final there. Then you lose to Portland, 122-108, another blowout loss, basically, to another team that, like, oh, by the way, the Lakers were shorthanded, so it's worth pointing that out. But Portland, athletic, long, you know, high motor guys that were up in passing lanes and turned the Lakers over a ton. And wouldn't you know it, the Lakers, and by the way, like after the game, you know, in Golden State and Portland, and basically every game that the Lakers have lost so far, JJ Redick whined about the transition defense. Well, of course, the transition defense isn't going to be what it needs to be when you don't have transition defenders and you don't play guys who are physically capable of sprinting up and down the court. Atlanta, another team that got after it defensively, a lot of long physical defenders and stuff like that, turned the Lakers over. Blew them out. The Lakers lost in even more embarrassing fashion, obviously, to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who like are the nth degree example of this identity. So of course that game didn't go very well. Phoenix beat the doors off of the Lakers as well, and it was a lot of the same things: length, athleticism, physicality. Turn the Lakers over. Get out and run. Score because nobody on the Lakers want to run. Boston is a little different because of the circumstances going into that game. But I told you guys going into that one, whether or not the Lakers had all of their guys, which they didn't, in complete fairness to the Lakers. But I told you guys going into that one, Boston is an athletic team that pressures you like crazy. They all play really fucking hard, and they beat the doors off the Lakers. And then tonight, the San Antonio Spurs, same thing.